Welcome to WebAx, practical web accessibility tips.
WebAx.blogspot.com.
WebAx. Website accessibility. Web standards.
Welcome to WebAx, podcast number 71, Jazz Lemon Interview and Aria. This is your main host, Dennis, and I am going solo today. And I got a great episode, though, to make up for my partner, or a partner, and that is, number one, a new theme song. There's a new WebAx intro and exiting music, the theme song, is custom made by a great old friend, Jeff Ensign from Glyphysian Arts and Entertainment out of Sacramento, California. So, thanks a lot, Jeff. I think he and his wife did a great job, so I hope you're liking it. And, even better, we're having Jez Lemon on the show, who is a web accessibility guru and an ARIA expert. And if you're not familiar with ARIA, you will be shortly, or you should be. It's a W3C specification. It stands for Accessible Rich Internet Applications. And it's really not too hard to implement. Just kind of learning the ins and outs, you know, there's a little bit of a curve there, and I'm also a beginner. But after the interview, I went into the code for accessible Twitter, you know, and I implemented it a little bit in there, and so far it's been pretty painless. So it's pretty neat, you know. It's not a lot of work, and it provides a whole nother layer of accessibility to your website or web application. So before we get into that, I just wanted to mention just a couple quick news items. And the first one is a slide deck, a slideshow on SlideShare that I thought was very valuable to mention. It's called The 5 Layers of Web Accessibility. So check that out. I'll put the link on the WebAx post for this episode, of course. And also, coming up in a couple months, July 20th and 21st, is the Accessing the Future Conference in Boston, Massachusetts, USA. And that's brought to you by IBM and the IEEE. So, without further ado, here is the interview with Jez Lemon. Enjoy. Okay, so we have Jez Lemon on the phone. Welcome to WebAx.
Thank you.
You work for the Paciello Group, and they're like outside London, is that correct?
There's the Paciello Group, the main office is based in America, so it's an American group headed by Mike Paciello.
Okay.
But I work for the European branch, which is based in Ireland. But I work in England. So all of us are based all over the world. We have got people in New Zealand. Steve Faulkner was in Australia, but is now living in London. We've got people in France and various locations in the US as well.
Oh, okay. And you're an accessibility consultant, which is why I've brought you on the show. And if you're not familiar, you're probably familiar with his name. Jez Lemon is pretty popular on the web. He has a blog, Juicy Studio. He's part of the WASP Accessibility Task Force, and he's become quite the expert in ARIA, which is one of the main reasons why I invited him to come on. He could talk to us about that a little later on. And you can follow him on Twitter, of course. So let's see. First question, Oh, yeah. So we talked a little bit about the Paciello group. And did you do any work on the – they have a web accessibility toolbar for IE. Did you do any work on that or –
The web accessibility toolbar for IE was developed by Steve Faulkner, a colleague of mine. He developed it when he was an auditor at Vision Australia to help him with his job. And this is, in fact, how we ended up meeting, that I wrote a couple of services on Juicy Studio, such as link analyzer, readability test. And he asked if he could link to those in the toolbar, and we ended up becoming friends through that. Steve Faulkner now works for TPG, the Paciello Group, and so the web accessibility toolbar has come across to the Paciello Group.
Oh, okay. Yeah, so that's – so I remember that toolbar when it was – I installed that on my IE6 for a while.
Uh-huh. It's a fantastic tool, but he did a brilliant job. And since he's been at TPG, one of our developers, Cedric Trevisan, he's off, based in our French office. He developed a version for Opera. And at the moment, Hans Hillen, who's our developer based in New Zealand, is creating a version for Mozilla. So, and I'm really looking forward to the Mozilla version.
Yeah. I've been using Opera more lately too, actually. I've been I usually have like a Firefox browser open with a bunch of tabs, and then lately I've been having an Opera browser open with a bunch of other tabs. It's pretty fast. I'm liking it. It's a pretty speedy browser.
Yeah, I'm the same. I tend to have all three open, but my main two would be Mozilla and Opera. I think Opera is absolutely brilliant. Very good.
Yeah. Speaking of, well, we could speak about that later, but you have an article on Opera's developer site on Aria. But before we get into that, I wanted to ask you about a couple of the articles that you've posted on Juicy Studio. I'll just talk about a few things. And one of them is a more recent one about requiring the alt attribute in HTML5. Can you tell us if you know what the latest word on that is and what your opinion is, if it should be or shouldn't be?
It's relatively long. I can't say in a short sentence exactly what the current thinking on that is. The idea of that particular article is the W3C's Web Accessibility Initiative Coordination Group were looking for positions on whether alt should be mandatory. So I wrote a position paper on it, and I tried to create an unbiased list so that I could include in that position paper, which is what that article was about. And to some extent, I think I did manage to get an unbiased list. The caveat being that I've obviously got a strong position that a text alternative, whether it comes through the alt attribute or through some other means, is absolutely essential for something to be perceivable. And a lot of people who read my blog obviously have that same view. But fortunately, people like Henry Sivanen, mm-hmm. Also commented, and he's a brilliant young developer who's closely involved in HTML5, and he has really good views, and so I'm glad he felt that he was comfortable enough to post. A couple of people tried to shout him down, but I took his views through to the Way Coordination Group anyway.
Okay.
And so the general thing at the moment, there's no definite answer, but the general thinking at the moment is providing that a text alternative is provided, then that should be adequate. So there could be scenarios where an alt attribute wouldn't be required, but it would need to be under certain circumstances. But as that's still being worked on at the moment, I can't give a definite answer about what that's about.
Okay. Well, I know it's still in the works and everything, so I'll put a link, of course, on this podcast posting on WebAx. So anyone out there, go ahead and read it if you're interested. The other thing is, you've developed like an accessibility ARIA toolbar for Firefox. Can you tell us about that?
The reason that was developed in the first place is that we do a lot of work with auditing ARIA, people who are implementing ARIA at the moment. We have a look at what they've done and test how well it works. And plus also, obviously, in the development work that we do, we include a lot of ARIA. And rather than fire up a screen reader every time, it just become necessary that we were able to find out what ARIA attributes were set and what elements they were set on and how well they would work. So I come up with this idea of just needing a toolbar that could do this kind of thing. So I put this together. And Steve Faulkner, who's behind the IE accessibility toolbar, who also oversaw the Opera toolbar and the current Mozilla toolbar work, has taken this over, and we're now, what I have at the moment is the last that's going to be produced by me. It's now gone over to Hans Hillen, who will incorporate everything that I've done, plus all of the work that was in the IE toolbar, to include this on the Mozilla toolbar.
Oh, wow.
So the Mozilla toolbar that's coming out, and also the Opera toolbar will be updated to do the same. And Steve is currently working on the IE toolbar to do the same. So eventually we'll have three toolbars that do everything that the current IE Watt does, plus also all these, having all of these ARIA information released to people as well, because it does make development and auditing a lot easier.
Yeah, totally. I'm sure a lot of people, you know, now that ARIA is getting more popular, will be able to make good use of that. So thank you.
Yeah, it's for people who are new to ARIA. This is and who don't feel confident checking their work with screen readers, which is quite reasonable. Quite often, we come across this all the time, where people who are not used to using screen readers evaluate their website with a screen reader and come to all of these conclusions that ultimately make their website a lot worse. If they just stuck to standards, if people generally stick to standards, you can't really go that wrong. And so having this toolbar will at least assure you, okay, well, I've set this particular property, I know what this property does, and so this should achieve this particular outcome. Mm-hmm. So it's likely to work well. And so far, the feedback's been pretty good. And Hans Hillen is another colleague of mine who's going to put this together in the Mozilla toolbar. He's an amazing and insightful developer. And so I'm very confident that the Mozilla toolbar, as well as all the others, will be a great asset for everybody.
Great. So make sure you let me know when that comes on to download that.
I need to keep on to it. So we're all really overworked because this is the kind of stuff we do. This is free, so we do all of this in our spare time.
Oh, I see.
So obviously we're all on to him all the time. Where are you? Where are you? But he's working again.
Right. He's off doing real work, right? Okay, let's move on to something else that you have done. I guess it was a few months ago you came out with the Focus Twitter Grease Monkey script, which helps the Twitter website become more accessible by helping focus, keyboard focus on a few different elements that normally wouldn't appear. Is that correct? Did I explain that right?
Yes. Yeah. I, like most people, absolutely love Twitter, but unfortunately, considering it's so simple, it's unbelievable that it's so inaccessible. And a lot of my friends were unable to enjoy Twitter because of these accessibility problems. So I decided just to fix the biggest issues, which were certain things were just not keyboard accessible. So that not only knocks out people with mobility problems, but people who use screen readers would never ever get to that information. Mm-hmm. So that was the inspiration behind that particular script. And because I'm dependent on someone else, every time they update the site, which surprisingly, I don't know how old that script is, but in the time that it's been out, I've had to update it three times. It's really, really frustrating. So I've got to say, thank you so much for what you've done with Accessible Twitter. It's a great application. And it's filled the void of what I was hoping to achieve at the time so much better than I ever could have wanted to. And I know that a lot of my friends are now using accessible Twitter as the way to access and enjoy Twitter in the same way that we all do.
Great, great. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, it's been a challenging but very fun and rewarding project. So, but actually, just to tell a quick story, your script was actually the, if you could, you might want to, was a catalyst for me doing the accessible Twitter. What happened was, I'm not sure if you or anybody else have read a couple of the interviews of me online, but you came out with that script, and then I think I Twittered about it, you know. And then one of my friends replied to that, and he said, well, why don't you just use the API and create, you know, a whole fully accessible Twitter website? And then I thought about it for a second, and I'm like, well, okay, you know. And my wife and kids were away for a couple weeks visiting family at the time. So I had, you know, obviously then some extra time on my hands. So I took his recommendation or suggestion, and that's how it came to be.
Oh, wow. Well, I'm flattered. Thank you very much. I have read a couple of interviews by you. I just didn't realize that that was what was the catalyst, but I'm really pleased it was, because it's a great application that's very needed.
Yeah, it seems to be growing in popularity pretty quickly, so I'm happy with that. So I just need...
What are you in terms of users now?
Yesterday was... The middle of the week, like, seems like Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays are the highest. Yesterday, there was over 500 unique visitors.
Wow.
So I think that's pretty good. PageRank? The Google PageRank, it premiered at a 5 out of 10 on there, so that was pretty cool. I think that's pretty good. Hoping that'll go higher.
Yeah. That's quite impressive for something that's only been out for a couple of months.
Yeah. All right. Well, enough about that. Let's see. Before we get into the Aria thing, I wanted to ask you, I've been meaning to ask you a question, because I know we emailed about it a little bit, but I understand you play a mean guitar and some piano. So what do you do with that? Or you said you come from a little bit from a musician background? Or
I can only assume, if you've read anything about a mean guitar, I can only assume that was probably something I said in jest. I can play the guitar, and I'm quite comfortable playing the guitar. I love playing any instrument, and I'm usually quite quick to pick things up. I picked up a saxophone and was able to play it relatively quickly. But for some reason, the piano, I just can't master. And I remember I decided to take it quite serious. This would have been about 1993. I decided to take it really, really serious and do it properly. So I hired a piano teacher. And so this person came around to teach me piano, and he was saying, oh, you should do your grades. I don't know if you have the same thing in America, but in Britain we have these things called grades that go between 1 and 8, where 1 is the absolute basic and 8 means that you're very proficient at playing that instrument. And so I decided to do my grades, and I did a grade 1, where you have to go and be assessed by someone. Mm-hmm. And I was assessed by somebody, I was assessed by a vicar at the local village hall. And I turned up, I was 29, so nearly 30 years old. And I'm with a bunch of precocious kids aged between 6 and 12. And I went in, I was so nervous. I do get quite nervous in social environments. So I went in and I was so nervous, and I had to basically just do a few exercises, play a scale, play a simple exercise and do a couple of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I mucked it up while I was in there, but it was okay. It went fine. So when I come out, my girlfriend, who was waiting for me on the outside, waited until we got out, and she turned around and said, they could all hear what I was doing while they were waiting outside. And one of the kids, who was probably aged about 8, turned around and said to their mum, "I can play much better than that, can't I, mummy?" And I had a piano. So this piano teacher that came around, he'd put on a show, and he asked me to play at this show because he thought I was making really, really good progress. He brought along the sheet music for Queen of Sheba and showed me how to play it, and so I learned how to play this thing, and I learned how to play this quite complex piece of music within a couple of weeks. So he was really excited, thinking, "Wow, you're going to be brilliant. You can come and play at this show." But what he didn't take into account is, as soon as he said, "Right, are you ready? Play it," nerves took over, and I couldn't play.
Oh man!
At no time could I play this piece of music. If I could play it right the way through on my own, as soon as someone was listening, I'd muck it up. Even if I put a tape recorder on, I'd muck it up, because it was just the pressure. So he decided, okay, well, that's just the pressure. He taught me the theme tune from Dr. Zhivago. And so I learned that, and exactly the same. That was a much, much easier piece. But exactly the same, as soon as he said, "Right, play it right the way through, I'm listening," I couldn't.
Then your nerves got to you, huh?
Yeah. So then he said, "Well, maybe we were better with the Queen of Sheba." So he said, "Go back and play that." And I honestly couldn't remember a note from it, even though I'd only learned one new song. So this kind of led me to believe I can only learn one piano piece at a time. So this is leading on. He's told me that I can play at this show. And it was ages before he gave me lots and lots of notice. And just before the show was about to take place, he just suddenly didn't show up, and I couldn't contact him through phone.
Mm-hmm.
And ironically, his name was Dennis, and he's the only other Dennis I've ever spoken to.
Yeah.
So when you didn't turn up when I was expecting you today, I'm thinking, oh no, please don't tell me. I make people with Dennis just run away.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah, we had a little bit of a time zone issue, but fortunately we were able to catch up with each other. So, yeah, I'm glad you came on and we caught each other. But, yeah, that's an interesting story. You don't seem to be too nervous now. So let's get into the aria portion of the show. And sorry if you're not familiar with that term, but I should mention at the beginning that it stands for Accessible Rich Internet Applications. And It's the W3C, part of the W3C's Web Accessibility Initiative. And let's see. Well, do you want to just give us a quick overview of your explanation of what it is and how it's helpful?
I'll try. That's quite a wide question.
As brief as possible, just, you know, something, an overview.
Okay, in really, really simple terms, it adds accessibility information to an application. The way the web's used at the moment, it was never perceived that the web would be used in the way that it is now. So when you see applications like Gmail, they have so many things in there that are updating or that you use in a way that's not implicit from the markup, that there was a need for something to add that accessibility information so that assistive technologies such as screen readers understood what was on the page. I think one of the most important things to understand about ARIA is that it is amazingly simple. If you were writing a web application, the complexity and difficulty of what you're doing is in creating rich internet controls that are not provided by HTML, such as a slider or a tree control or even a simple menu that you see on every website. All of these things were never ever written into HTML, and ARIA provides the technology so that you can say, right, this is a menu, this is a tree, this is a slider, so that when people were using a screen reader, they're not looking at an image that has an accessible name of thumb and wondering what this means.
Mm-hmm.
They're being told, this is a slider, its current value is 45, its minimum value is 1, and its top value is 60.
So what's the
Well, that was a good explanation. And what are the basics about actually implementing this? Is it, it's, you know, because I'm not too, you know, experienced with this yet. I'm starting to learn it. And is it basically a matter of just like adding these attributes onto the tags and stuff? Or can you kind of explain what, you know, the gist of it is?
Essentially, it is exactly what you just said. It is a case of just adding attributes to existing tags to provide the accessibility information that wouldn't normally be there. So, for example, if you had a slider control, then you might implement that using an input type equals image and provide a thumb. And I'm assuming that someone would use an input type of image because it automatically has keyboard focus. But the things it's missing are, what is it? What does it do? What is it? What is the minimum value I can provide? What is the maximum value I can provide? What is the value now? How should that be pronounced in text? And so ARIA provides all of these things through roles, which would tell you what it is. Mm-hmm. So it role equals slider, role equals tree, role equals menu item, and then ARIA properties to tell you the state of that control as it is at the moment. So if it's a slider control, for instance, you might use ARIA value min equals 0, ARIA value max equals 100, ARIA value now equals 67, and possibly even the ARIA value text to explain what that 67 means. For example, 67%. So ARIA is just a way of adding accessibility information to existing markup. And when it was first introduced, it was quite complex to provide because there was a syntax that you used if you were using XHTML, and there was a syntax that you used if you were using HTML, which was really quite complicated, which has all just been abolished now. And basically, everybody just has agreed to just provide those attributes directly on the element to provide that accessibility information.
Okay. And do those attributes validate with the W3C validators?
No, that's probably one of the biggest things. And there are a couple of things here. Number one, Steve Faulkner, a colleague of mine, wrote a DTD that does accept all of the ARIA roles and properties.
Oh.
So he's all that. And if you use this particular DTD, you can add these things and it will validate.
Okay.
Personally,
can you send me that? Send me a, is there like some kind of online resource for that? I'd like to use that and maybe put it up on the blog post.
There is. The one thing I would say to anybody that's interested in ARIA is please look at the passiellogroup.com/blog. Near enough every article, a lot of the articles are about ARIA. And Steve produces some absolutely brilliant work. He tests regularly, and all of this is blogged. Any findings he finds is blogged, and this particular thing is on that blog. I will send you the URL for this particular thing.
Okay.
But I would recommend that anyone interested in ARIA reads the passiellogroup.com blog, because we write about it quite a lot, and in particular Steve Faulkner. He does a lot of great work with ARIA.
Yeah, that is a great site. It's Passiello Group, PASIELLOGROUP.com/blog. Great. Okay, that pretty much explains all the basics. Is the the slider example, I assume, is a little more complex than most of the uses.
Can I just add a couple of other things about the validation issue?
Because
I think what Steve's done is brilliant, and this isn't to try and take away anything from what Steve's done. A lot of people take validation seriously and wouldn't consider allowing website to not validate. Personally, although I have a really strong belief in validation is about quality assurance, and you should do everything that you should to ensure that your website validates. But when it's using a W3C technology such as WayARIA, then I think it's considering that HTML hasn't changed for however many, over 10 years, I think it's quite acceptable. The one other thing, most ARIA, ARIA is concerned with making web applications accessible. So that generally involves using JavaScript. So one thing people can do who want to validate but also want to use ARIA is you can inject these ARIA properties with scripting. I wrote an article for Opera about it was an introduction to ARIA, and the very last point on that article was talking about this exact issue about validation, and I mentioned that you can just inject the ARIA properties straight into the content, so that if anybody decides, oh, does this website validate, because that's what they're going to use as the yardstick to determine the quality of this website, they get a plus. But the real issue is this website accessible by people with disabilities? They also get the plus of getting the accessible properties in the markup without someone having to use a specific DTD. Because I think what Steve's done is brilliant and will be used by people. The majority of people aren't going to use a specific DTD just to get validation. So it's probably better that they either introduce those ARIA properties with scripting, or just accept, I'll accept validation issues, but only if they are prefixed with ARIA.
Right. Great point. Yeah. Yeah. And that, I mean, that definitely goes to be said, you know, if your site doesn't validate for certain reasons that are totally acceptable, then that's okay. Such as using ARIA. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that'll be added to their DTD sometime soon. But probably not.
Probably not. Yeah. I can't imagine it. Well, it definitely won't be added to HTML 4.01. So that's kind of like, or XHTML 1.x. So that's a lost cause. It may be added to XHTML 2.x. And it's likely to be added, or some of ARIA is likely to be added to HTML 5. But I think for something as important as this, and I've been a very, very, very strong opponent, a very, very strong advocator of validate or markup that is conformant rather than validity, because you can get anything to become valid. But being conformant with the specification, using it how it's meant to be, creates accessible content. So I've been very vocal in that in the past. But the one thing I'm prepared to obviously relax my views is over something like ARIA, because it's just so important. It makes the experience for assistive technology users equivalent to those who don't use assistive technology. Without this markup, they can't perceive the page.
Definitely, yeah. And I need to relax about that too, because I admit that I'm a validation freak, and sometimes, you know, it's not necessary.
I'm completely with you.
Yeah. So let's talk about a few of the ARIA types or techniques. Like, I guess maybe the most basic is landmark roles. Can you give us a couple of examples of what that is, and give us a couple of examples?
Yes, landmark roles. If you think about a basic web page, it's divided into chunks that most people, if you're a sighted user, then you will perceive the page as a series of chunks, such as the header, a navigation down by the side, you'll see a search bar, you'll know where the main content is, and you'll know where content that's associated with that is. So the idea behind landmarks is to mark out the page so that people can find that information easily. So traditionally, screen reader users, for example, would, if they visited a website that was very well built, they would hit 1 to find out what the major heading for the website is. They might press 2 to go through the major headings of the website, and obviously 3 for subheadings, or they might use H to try and determine where they were within the website. Mm-hmm. Or they could provide a list of headers or a list of links, and all of these things gave them information about the structures. Landmarks provide what they were actually trying to find out, which is, where is the main content? Where is the search area? Where is the navigation? These are the things that people really wanted to do. And so landmarks are a brilliant thing in ARIA in that this is something that even if you have a static website, you can add landmark roles to your website. Juicy Studio doesn't have any dynamic content to speak of, but I've marked up several things in as landmarks, such as where the navigation is, where the main content is, and where the search is. And with certain screen readers, such as JAWS 10, for example, you can use the semicolon, which will take you to the next landmark. Shift plus semicolon will take you to the previous landmark. And Control plus Insert plus semicolon will provide a list of landmarks on the page. And if people start providing these things, which is possible now with any website and understandable by at least JAWS 10, then it makes it so much easier for screen reader users and assistive technology users to access your website. So this is something that anybody can do right now.
Okay. Now, do you see any conflict with using that and then HTML5? Because I know a big part of HTML5 is creating those, you know, the new tags that describe actually, you know, like headers and footers and stuff. Or is that just working together in sync?
Oh. Yeah, I think it's more about becoming in sync, because I definitely don't see a conflict. I think there are things in HTML5 that may overlap, in which case people should use the HTML5 version of the element, or otherwise things that HTML5 provides that looks as if it's going to provide that functionality but doesn't really. For example, there might be a restriction that there may only be one of those on a page, in which case people could use the ARIA version. Because as brilliant as HTML5 is, I think HTML5, from what I've read about HTML5, most of it is brilliant. There are a few accessibility concerns I have. But the fact of the matter is that these things, the ARIA landmarks are supported by 18 now. And from my point of view, I'm looking to give people using assistive technology a better experience now, rather than I wonder what will happen when HTML5 is finally released.
Yeah.
But I would encourage people to use as much as HTML5 as they possibly can. That is supported. But
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. Both are actually being supported already, but ARIA has already been an approved standard, right? And I think there's more supported a little more widely.
Well, it's quite surprising, because considering that ARIA is a moving target, it's still being developed at the moment. The ARIA best practice document, which is a fantastic document, is always on the move. Things are being added to it, things are being removed to it, depending on what's going on, because this is still a technology that's being developed. But it's so important that, surprisingly, most assistive technologies already support this. NVDA, JAWS, and Window Eyes, which must be the three biggest assistive technologies, mm-hmm. all have some support for Way ARIA.
Okay. Well, let's talk about live regions. That's another type of ARIA code, I guess you could say. Where would that be used? Would that be used like for AJAX and stuff, for like areas, content on the page that can change?
Yes, exactly. That's exactly when it would be used. If something's going to change, then that's when you'd use it. And as an analogy, if you have a website that has a load of portions on the website, but something's likely to change, then people currently use techniques such as the yellow fade technique, where they focus on that particular point, make it bright yellow, and then it gradually fades lower, mm-hmm. to indicate that this part of the page has changed. But unfortunately, assistive technology doesn't get any of this, that they don't know what's changed. So one of the things that Way ARIA provide is something known as a live region, which provides a whole load of properties, well, about 3 or 4 properties that can assist people understanding what's happened. And obviously what you would convey depends on exactly what your application is. So for instance, if you were developing a chat application, you would just want it to announce what somebody had just typed. Whereas if you were using a stock ticker, for example, you wouldn't just want it to read out random numbers because that wouldn't make sense on its own. So you'd want it to announce the whole region of where it was. And so live regions provide a set of properties that allow you to do this. The most important being the ARIA live property, which is off, which is the default, that nothing gets announced. ARIA polite, that if something changes, it will tell the user as soon as they finish what they've finished doing. Or ARIA assertive, which will tell them as soon as what they finish doing, but maybe earlier if they take a long time. And originally, in the first specification, there used to be a property called rude, but that was dropped because they felt that the alert role was pretty much the same thing. If you said alert this, then that's an immediate action that happens at that second and interrupts anything that they are doing. Other properties that are really, really useful. There's a property called ARIA atomic, and this relates to what I was just mentioning about the chat application and the stop ticker. So with ARIA atomic, it takes two values, either true or false. And if you say true, it means that it will read everything that's associated with this update. Mm-hmm. And if you say false, then it will only announce the update. So for the chat application, you would only want to read the new text, not the whole log. But with the stop ticker, you would want to announce not only the new value, but what that value related to. So that whole thing would be atomic. There's an ARIA busy property, which says basically set it, this again takes a value of true or false. If it's set to true, it means don't read anything because we're in the middle of updating a lot of information. So there could be all kinds of things. And what you wouldn't want is the assisted technology announcing one thing when something else was still being updated, which would then need to be re-announced. While something else was being updated would then need to be re-announced. So the ARIA busy means just hold on while we do this. And then when ARIA busy is set to false, that's the cue for assistive technology to announce whatever changes had happened. And finally, there's an ARIA relevant property which says, what do you want to announce? Do you want to announce if nodes are added? Do you want to announce if nodes are removed? Do you want to announce if text is changed? So you've got quite a fair amount of control on over what is announced and what isn't.
Yeah, it sounds like it's been pretty well thought out.
Uh-huh. it has.
That's great.
Just to say one other thing about this as well. So if we take accessible Twitter, for example, one of the things that you've added is an earcon, which is that it uses, is it Flash and something else?
It uses Flash and JavaScript, yeah.
Flash and JavaScript to announce if you're under a certain amount of characters. So one of the things that you could do is around the text that tells you how many characters would simply be to be add the attribute ARIA live equals polite, ARIA atomic equals true, just to announce whatever's within this section, and then however many 39 characters left, so that that's announced to the user. Mm. And that's as simple as live regions are. That small change would make that part accessible to people who didn't use Flash, who didn't have JavaScript, for example.
Right.
Assuming that you didn't add it with JavaScript, but if you added that within the markup, then it doesn't depend on anything else, and assistive technology would be able to announce that.
Yeah, that's a great example. So now I'm going to have to go and do that right away.
I deliberately, when I was thinking about this, I was thinking, try to get in accessible Twitter.
Yeah, I'm sure there's lots of stuff I can do with ARIA in there. So then that's on the list, right on the homepage of tasks to do.
The big take I hope everybody takes from this is that the one thing about ARIA is that it is amazingly simple. When you consider, because it's generally added to things like drag and drop items, where the code behind it is really, really complex. And quite often when people show ARIA examples, they show this really, really complex code. But that's not to do with ARIA. That's to do with what did it take to drag and drop this particular item. Mm-hmm. The ARIA bit is usually one very, very small property with one very, very small value. And that's it. But that one small bit makes such a difference to assist technology.
Cool. I did have one other question for you. What's the difference? Because I was, you know, like I said, I've been starting to take a look at this. And can you briefly just tell us the difference between the ARIA roles menu and navigation?
No. is the quick answer. You throw me there.
Are they really that similar? It seemed like by reading some documentation, it seemed like menu was supposed to be more for like some kind of like a toolbar thing, and navigation was like more like for like a regular, the more popular, like just like text link navigation.
The difference is that navigation is a landmark role. So basically that means that if someone was to press semicolon, they would go to through each of the roles that are on there at the moment. This is in JAWS 10. So if you press semicolon, you go to main. Press semicolon again, you go to search. Press semicolon again, you go to the navigation area. The menu item itself is a part of a menu system. So when you try to interact with a menu, the menu would say menu with six items. Then when you go to item one, it would say menu item one, three subheadings.
Okay.
So it's actual information about a menu bar rather than a navigation area.
Navigation would be more like on a div containing your navigation elements.
Exactly.
But a menu would actually be an attribute that would go more like on a UL.
Exactly. So the menu is the user interface, whereas navigation is the part of the document that contains the menu.
Okay, cool. That's a good, solid explanation right there. Sets me straight. Okay, well, excellent. That was very, very helpful information and tips. So is there anything else you wanted to add?
No, nothing from me.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Jez, for joining me. And yeah, I'm sure we'll stay in touch online and on Twitter. Thanks again.
Thank you very much. Thank you. And thank you for making it, a good experience for my first ever podcast.
You're welcome. Glad you enjoyed it.
The WebEx podcast and blog at webex.blogspot.com. That's WEBAXE.blogspot.com.